Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Outlasting the Gay Revolution is a new book by my next guest, Dr. Michael Brown, Christian broadcaster, author, and educator. His website is askdrbrown.org. This is being recorded in early September 2015. Dr. Brown, welcome back to the program. Congratulations on a new book. And let's first start out and find out why you wrote the book and what it's all about.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Jerry. Thanks so much. As many of us who are on the front lines of standing for conservative Christian values in America, we've watched what's happened in our country in recent years, and there's a lot of discouragement. It seems that everything's going in the wrong direction. It seems that many of the things we're standing for were being defeated in the courts. The Supreme Court ruling in June, redefining marriage, it can be a discouraging time. But I wrote this book based on two firm convictions. Number one, that gay activism has within it the seeds of self-destruction, and that as it continues to succeed, it will actually in many ways undermine itself. And then secondly, that unless Jesus comes first, there is going to be a turning of the tide, that we are going to see a godly, Jesus-based moral and cultural revolution in America. So I wrote this book really to bring hope and courage and faith, and then to give long-term strategy to God's people.
Huh. Okay, so what is it that makes you feel that the gay movement will ultimately implode?
Well, there's several things we can see happening already, and I document them in detail in the book so people can see what's happened so far. One is that the bullying will backfire. We all know that one of the strengths of the gay activist movement is, hey, we've been bullied, we've been victims. We were picked on at school. We're discriminated against in society. Well, now things have changed so dramatically that those who were bullied have become the bullies. In fact, I saw not that long ago that Madonna's brother, an openly gay man, came out in favor of Kim Davis, the Kentucky County clerk, jailed for not issuing same-sex marriage licenses. And he said, if she doesn't have rights, then all the rights we fought for mean nothing.
Wow.
In other words, things will go too far. There will be more and more opposition to Christians, jailing of Christians, Christians losing jobs, Christians being put down. And those who were bullied will become the bullies. And people will side not with the bullies, but with the victims of bullying. It'll take some time, but that's one thing. Another thing is, once you redefine marriage, you render it meaningless. These are principles that I lay out in the book, so that if you're really going to push for marriage equality for all, and I have the right to marry the one I love, and love wins, well, you can't just limit that to two people. You have to open up to all different kinds of combinations. You even have to open up to adult incestuous relationships and crazy things like that. So marriage becomes so tenuous in meaning that only those that hold to marriage as God intended it will survive. That's another aspect. Another thing is that sexual purity will trump sexual anarchy. And this is part, our embrace of homosexual practice is not part of greater tolerance. It's part of lower morality. And on it goes. The attack on gender can't be sustained. When you declare war on the very foundations of humanity, namely that God made us male and female, and that's really what makes the world go around. When you declare war on that, it becomes unsustainable. When gender just becomes this malleable, theoretical thing that's just whatever you think it is, it's unsustainable. So I see the great successes of gay activism as really undermining gay activism. Oh, not overnight. Again, we're looking at this for the long haul, but I see something that is not sustainable in a culture long term.
Hmm. And in the meantime, how do we as Christians, what's the best way to respond?
Well, the best way to respond is this. First, we get God's heart. We're not declaring war on homosexual men and women. We're simply standing up for what's right. So we start with God's heart. We start with being freshly devoted to Jesus ourselves, because let's be candid. There are so many tens of millions of professing Christians in America, and God knows the number of evangelical Christians in America. If we simply stood up for what was right, mm-hmm. if we simply started living right ourselves, if we cleaned house ourselves, if we got rid of the no-fault divorce in the church and the pornography in the church, and our leaders were more and more leaders were living godly lives, we had less and less scandals, we'd be a whole lot less hypocritical. We'd be able to lead the way. We'd be more effective salt and light. And then we draw a line in sand. Principle number one of the eight in my book, never compromise your convictions. We determine what's right before God as to how we have to live, decisions we have to make, standards we have to hold, and it doesn't matter what comes our way. Look, Jerry, nobody's lining up us up on the street right now and beheading us. We're not being tortured to death in prison. We're not suffering what Christians are suffering in other parts of the world. What's being asked of us is really very little. So here's where we start. We get God's heart, and then we draw a line in the sand, and we say we're not being moved from these convictions. You can put us in jail. You can kick us out of a university. You can fire us, and we won't get our pension. We're willing to do what's right rather than what's convenient. We're exchanging our convenience store gospel for a gospel with some backbone. And then second principle of the book, take the highest moral ground. If we descend into a mud street fight, a dirty fight, and people hate us and we hate them back, we can't change the world doing that. I believe Martin Luther King said it succinctly when he said that darkness can't drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Mm-hmm. To the extent we emulate the character of Jesus, to the extent we can walk in love towards all, including those who vilify us and mock us, to that extent we can really make a difference in the society in a lasting way.
Mm. You know, and I think part of the thing, too, one of the voices that has really been lost in this whole battle over same-sex marriage have been the ex-gays, especially when Exodus closed their doors a couple of years ago and some of the leadership basically threw in the white towel and said, you know, you really can't change after all and so forth. Meanwhile, out of the ashes of all this grew this other movement, which is basically the, you know, standing for the Bible and standing for the idea that homosexuals can be redeemed by Jesus Christ. And so that group led by Ann Polk has had a very different take on this, but the ex-gay movement has really taken a drubbing, unfortunately.
Yeah, it really has. And let's understand that this is part of a major ideological battle. In other words, if you can change, if people can go from homosexual to heterosexual, or in some sense of the word, they become former homosexuals, then it's not innate and immutable. It's not, I was born this way and I can't change. You can't right. say that gay is the new black. So this becomes a massive ideological threat. I mean, it's really a sad thing to think about. Let's take some kid, maybe he gets bullied at school. He's called a sissy and worse names than that because he seems to be different than the other boys, and he is. He's attracted to boys, not girls. He goes through the ridicule that still happens in some places. And then he goes through a traumatic thing. He's in a Christian home. He tells his parents, I'm gay. He's maybe 14 years old. His parents don't know how to handle it. They reject him. He gets suicidal. He goes through all these difficult phases. Finally, at 18, he says, I'm out and I'm proud. This is who I am. And so he goes through all that. Now at 25, he has a real encounter with Jesus. And God comes into his life and he realizes this is displeasing to the Lord. I'm going to live for God. And now he gets rejected by the gay community, and the church doesn't know what to do with him. They're afraid to touch this issue. I mean, this person of all should have sympathy. This person of all should have people rallying around him. The tolerant gay crowd, they should be saying, hey, man, we're for tolerance. We're for self-determination. You have at it, boy. Go for it, man. You be who you want to be. No, they say, no, you're in denial, or you're just suppressing things, or you're bisexual, and you're not in touch with who you really are, and you're just bought out by the Christian right, and you're their new poster boy. That person gets vilified by their former community, and then so much of the church is afraid to address these things. Mm-hmm. I believe, though, that one of the things that we can look forward to is God really moving among homosexual men and women. Mm. I came to faith in 1971 as a heroin-shooting, LSD-using, hippie rock drummer. And I was one of many, many hippies, radicals, rebels around the world that got saved in what was called the Jesus Revolution. It was so prominent that Time magazine in June of 1971 had it as a cover story, the Jesus Revolution, because we were getting saved all around the world in the most unusual, dramatic ways. And that's how so many of us came to faith, came into the church. I believe this. Many of my friends believe it. I address it in part in the chapter in the book called Factor in the God Factor, that we've had awakenings in the past in America that have shaken and shaped our nation. And I believe that as we pray and cry out, God will be merciful and will pour out his Spirit again. And what I'm expecting is just like in the Jesus Revolution, all these hippies, radicals, rebels came to faith, that we're going to see a lot of homosexual men and women in the coming years radically and dramatically converted. And you know that game Whack-A-Mole where you get this little ball, you got to hit it. Okay, you're doing great at first until they're coming out like six or seven at a time, and then you can't do it. I believe that as we will see men who were homosexual active, women who are homosexual active, being transformed by the gospel, by the love of God and the grace of God, and saying, I'm living for Jesus now, there are going to be too many to deny. There are going to be too many for us to say, well, it's, you know, we don't really know what's happening. So one of the greatest antidotes that we have to gay activism is to demonstrate that Jesus really changes lives, that you're not born this way, that even if you're born this way, Jesus can change anybody, doesn't matter who you are, that this is not innate and immutable, and it's going to be hard to deny as God moves more powerfully.
Yeah, that's true. You know, one phrase comes to mind an ex-gay might well say to, let's say, his friends who are still in the lifestyle, hey, be nice to me, you may be next. I mean, because you never know. You know, it's true, though. In fact, there's even a website, renewedhopenetwork.org, of all these former homosexuals and former lesbians, one of whom, as I mentioned, Ann Polk, she actually made the cover of Newsweek. Now, unfortunately, her former husband also was on that cover, and he went back into the homosexual lifestyle. But sometimes that happens with Christian conversion, as you know. You know, the Bible calls us living sacrifices. The problem is sometimes those living sacrifices, in some cases, crawl off that altar.
Yeah, the fact is, when someone falls away from the Lord, that doesn't prove that God is unfaithful, and it doesn't prove that people aren't genuinely saved along the way or maybe go through a rough stretch. It doesn't deny the gospel. What happens here is the moment you have a prominent ex-gay person who now says, no, I'm going back to my homosexuality, that's used to disprove the whole thing.
Yep.
Whereas the fact is, Jerry, you and I over the years have met many, 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 many people. They're just in the churches. They're not famous. They're not on anybody's payroll, but they've come out of homosexuality. Either they have renounced homosexual practice, even though they haven't experienced a change in their romantic attraction and sexual desires, or they've actually experienced a change. Someone very close to our family, married to someone close to our family. That's what happened to him. He got saved. He was homosexual, and he encountered the Lord. And when he gave his life to the Lord, he gave his sexuality to God as well. And to his wonderful surprise, found himself attracted to women and only women the rest of his life. So God can do this. God can bring about this change. But I think the biggest thing is that we need to put our hope in God. That we need to not look around at legislative failures, at this is going wrong and that's going wrong, because we're on the side of truth. Principle number six in my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, is keep propagating the truth until the lies are exposed. You know, it can be frustrating because it seems the media is spouting all the lies. You know, 1 in 10 is gay, and you're born this way, and gay is the new black, and people just take these sound bites and believe them to be true.
Love
but
wins.
We have to keep speaking the truth, because a lot of gay activism is founded on lies, exaggerations, deception, and when that gets out, when the truth gets out, it will have a revolutionary effect.
That's so true. Okay, we're talking right now with Dr. Michael Brown. Ask drbrown.org for more information. His new book is called Outlasting the Gay Revolution. Now, Dr. Brown, by the way, one of the slogans that they use these days is love wins. And it's certainly true biblically, love wins, and so does justice. And as my colleague John Rabe puts, they both meet at the foot of the cross. But there is a sense in which the love wins phrase is being used to promote sin. Just like the rainbow flag, remember the rainbow was God's sign to Noah that the world will not be judged in the way he did with the flood. But now they use that sign in a sacrilegious way, and I've seen it all over the world in different places, and it obviously is a pro-homosexual propaganda. It's amazing.
Yeah, what's amazing is how effective the propaganda has been. I document quotes from gay activists where they say this is their plan. This is what we're going to do.
After the ball.
Propaganda fed through the, right, after the ball, other strategies like that from the late 1980s. This is what we're going to do. It's almost like I say, all right, I'm going to come up to you, I'm going to pick your pocket, I'm going to take the wristwatch off your watch, and you won't know as I do it. And I do it right in front of your eyes. So they said through media, through propaganda fed through the media, we're going to change the thinking of Americans. They said, look, even if some of what we say is not true, that's fine because what was said about us was not true. In other words, there were bad lies about us that weren't true, so we'll have good lies about us that aren't true. And, you know, we'll use the 1 in 10 number. That's a convenient number. We'll paint a picture of gay relationships as if they're all pristine, you know, Tom and Tim together for life kind of thing. And we'll undo the negative stereotypes with positive stereotypes, even if they're dishonest. So surveys have been done, and again, I document all this in An Outlast in the Gay Revolution. Surveys have been done. Last year, Centers of Disease Control, July 2014, released the data, and they got this information, asking questions, anonymous information, the most comprehensive survey done yet, and they discovered that 1.6% of the population, the adult population, identifies as gay or lesbian. Another 0.07% said that they are bisexual. So that's 2.3% says they're gay or bisexual. That's less than 1 in 40 people. Less than 1 in 50 say that they are gay or lesbian. And yet, when Gallup did a poll in 2011, numbers are probably higher now, your average American thought 25% of the population was gay.
Wow.
Where'd they get that from? They certainly don't think 1 in 4 of their friends is gay, and yet that's what they estimated. Not only so, but young people put the number at about 1 out of 3.
Wow.
I was speaking at a Christian apologetics conference for young people last year, and I asked the question. Now, remember, a lot of these kids are homeschooled. A lot of these kids are Christian high schools or colleges. They're committed. They're serious believers. They're there at an apologetics conference. I asked them, what percentage of the population is gay? First kid guessed 30%. Second kid, 40%. So what does that tell you? The media has done its job. And then social media has done its job in such a way that there's this overwhelming feeling that the whole world is against you if you hold to biblical values.
Yep.
And what I'm saying in my book is, hold on, be strong, truth will triumph. It's going to take some time, but light ultimately will expose the darkness.
And even if it were 70%, the truth is still the truth. And
yes.
It's far from 70%, obviously. But,
right.
But talk about the world against us. Let's talk for a few minutes about Kim Davis. As we record this discussion with Dr. Michael Brown, ask drbrown.org for more information. Comment on the Kim Davis case. Here she is in jail. This is day number 6, I believe.
Yes, she's in jail, and she went to jail simply saying that she could not issue same-sex, quote, marriage certificates.
Yeah, by the way, for those who've been in a cave for the last week or so, tell us who Kim Davis is, and then comment on her case.
Yeah, Kim Davis is in a small county, Rowan County in Kentucky. She was married 3 times before coming to faith in Jesus about 4-odd years ago. She became a strong, committed believer. She is an elected official. Her mother served as the county clerk there for decades before her. She is now the clerk. One of her responsibilities is to issue marriage licenses. It's not a major responsibility, but it's one responsibility. And when the laws were changed by the Supreme Court, she said she could not offer these certificates in conscience before God. Her name would be on them. So every couple getting married would say Kim Davis on it. And the forms that still has male, female, bride, groom. Nothing's changed there. So when same-sex couples wanted certificates, she said she couldn't issue them. In fact, she said, we're just not going to issue any marriage certificates at all, which would mean people drive maybe a half hour to the next county to get certificates. That was her way of taking a stand. And in her view, she said the people of Kentucky have voted, and the vote was overwhelming. I think 75% of the people in 2004 said marriage is the union of a man and a woman. And she said it's Kentucky law. The Supreme Court does not have the right to make law and overthrow constitutional rights. They offered various simple accommodations. Hey, if since the law requires in Kentucky that you accommodate for someone's religious beliefs unless they have it's going to cause hardship, which would not be the case here, here's ways you can accommodate, or people would have an online form. So the government just said no. We're not going to accommodate. I believe they didn't do their part. So a federal judge got involved, held Kim Davis in contempt of court, and Jerry, put her in jail without bail. The thing is a complete outrage. Even some liberal critics are a little embarrassed by how far things have gone. Put in jail. So this is yet another example of the bullying backfiring. All this does now is stir up Christians around the country. All this does is wake them up to what we've been saying for years, that gay activism, not your gay or lesbian neighbor or family member or friend, but gay activism is the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience in America. And the bullying is backfiring. It's starting to awaken people. And where this goes next, I personally believe it's going to spread to many other places where many other believers who are going to act the same way and say, sorry, but we can't compromise our convictions. We can't participate in these things that are a violation of our convictions. And again, when it's not just one case here or another case there, but scores of cases, hundreds of cases around the country, the tide will begin to turn.
You know, even the Wall Street Journal on Friday, early September, they had an editorial about Kim Davis's case, and they said, well, suddenly the Obama administration discovers the rule of law. Because, yeah, you know, before, when Eric Holder, for example, was the attorney general, you know, well, we don't like the Defense of Marriage Act, so we're not going to enforce it. And that's before it was decided on. But we've reached the point now in this country where basically the law is, and the Constitution is, whatever the Supreme Court says it is. I'm not sure if constitutionally that is correct. In fact, Abraham Lincoln said in his first inaugural address that if we accept that, then we, the people, have ceased to be our own rulers. And I'm positive he had in mind the Dred Scott decision, which, by the way, took a civil war to undo. But we've had terrible years now of judicial activism, Roe v. Wade, it brought pornography on demand, now same-sex marriage. Where does it stop?
Yeah, well, that is something that I've been looking at. I'm not an expert, constitutional expert,
nor
an expert on jurisprudence, but I've seen enough quotes from the fathers. I've looked at our history enough to realize that they did not intend,
right,
to have all this power vested in 9 non-elected officials. And you know who said it more clearly than anybody?
Jefferson.
The 4 dissenting justices.
Oh, yeah, they did.
In the Obergefell case, they've said it so clearly. They've really said you've got no basis for this in the Constitution. You just created this out of whole cloth. So it's right to stand up. In other words, Kim Davis, it can be argued, is standing for the rule of law and standing against lawlessness. I wrote about this as well, though, what we've really learned from the arrest of Kim Davis. We can have a friendly debate. Well, should she have resigned? Or should she do something else? You know, what should a Christian do? Fine, I'm happy to have that debate. But what's become clear is this has nothing to do with whether or not you're supposed to obey the law or not. You've got these mayors with sanctuary cities that say, immigration laws say this, I don't care. The same left that's vilifying Kim Davis and saying she deserves to be in jail, this is the same left that praised Gavin Newsom in 2004 when he began to issue same-sex so-called marriage licenses when he was mayor of San Francisco. And remember, California had clearly said marriage is the union of a man and a woman. President Bush had reinforced that statement publicly. And then Newsom decides, I'm going to go against this. He doesn't go to jail. He doesn't get fined. He's considered a hero. And on it goes. Attorney General Eric Holder said this. He told other attorneys general across the country, if you don't like a particular law, you don't have to defend it, even though it's your responsibility to. You don't have to. He said, for example, I wouldn't defend laws standing for discrimination and years back. So he was telling them, I don't like the laws against same-sex so-called marriage. So I'm telling you, don't defend these laws. Everybody says, great, that's bold, that's courageous. But when a Christian stands up for convictions, they get blasted. So what we've learned is this has nothing to do with whether or not you should obey the law. It has everything to do with what Christians believe. And that is what is coming under increasing attack. So it's time that people wake up to reality. I mean, you and I, we've been telling people for years and years, these kinds of things are coming. You're a scholar in Jefferson and these things. You know what the fathers intended. This is something very radical. Now's the time to wake up. The good news is that the darker it gets, the more the light can shine brightly, and that the story is not over yet. It's not time to throw in the towel. It's time to push back.
In love. How do we manage? How do we manage to write the last chapter of the book?
What we have to do is determine to be in this for the long haul. Many Christians get excited about the end times and prophecy, and we're out of here any minute. The end is near. We're out of here any minute. And as a result of it, we have kind of an escapist mentality, or we just get this passive mentality. Well, everything will work out. But we have to say is, okay, we're praying fervently for the return of Jesus, but this much we know. We have a lifetime assignment. We have kids. We have grandkids. We're going to think in a multi-generational way. We're not looking at this as a short-term battle. For example, the Supreme Court decision, that for us, that's the Roe v. Wade moment. That's the beginning of the battle, not the end. This is not where we throw in the towel. So we regain our hope in God, and we begin to think long-term. And I've been hearing from readers of the book, as the book is just getting out now, they're reading the book, and they're writing, I am so encouraged. I was discouraged. Good. I was down in the dumps. I am so encouraged. So here's what we understand. If we live right, if we honor God, if we conduct our families right, our marriages right, we'll be the last man standing. We will be the ones reproducing something that can be modeled through the generations. So if Jesus doesn't come first, we can bring about a radical cultural change, and one that's based on the gospel, one that's based on prayer, one that's based on love, one that's based on truth. And those things cannot be extinguished.
You know, that's so true. I mean, when you look at the panorama of history, it's hard to believe, for example, that the Christian church not only survived the Roman Empire with all of the terrible persecutions against it, but it actually overtook in love the Roman Empire. I mean, it's just amazing. As Will Durant, a secular historian, put it in his great volume, Caesar and Christ, he said, Caesar and Christ had met in the arena, and Christ had won. And it's just an amazing thing, and you're absolutely right. This too shall pass. Outlasting the Gay Revolution. Again, that's a new book by Dr. Michael Brown. AskDrBrown.org for more information. You've got 30 seconds for a closing thought, Dr. Brown.
Mordecai will not bow. Look in the book of Esther. Haman was not happy until Mordecai the Jew bowed. Mordecai didn't bow. The tables were turned. We're not looking for anyone to be hurt, exterminated, put away. What we're saying is the tide will turn as we stand strong and do what's right and say Mordecai will not bow. We will witness a cultural change by the help of God in front of our eyes.
So may God give us the courage and the strength and the love to persist and persevere. Thank you so much for being with us. Again, AskDrBrown.org for more information. The new book is called Outlasting the Gay Revolution. Dr. Michael Brown has been our guest. Thank you, Dr. Brown. God bless you.
Always a joy. Thank you.
Thank you.